The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have two experts in the world of big data. Everyone's talking about big data and data lakes and data ponds and data oceans, I guess. So I thought we'd bring in a couple mariners to tell us about the big data that's out there floating around. In the studio today, we have Sean Bierweiler. He's the president at Hortonworks Federal. And we have Henry Sowell, who is a technical director for public sector at a company called Hortonworks. Gentlemen, how are you two doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm setting you up as experts in big data and Hortonworks and everything, so you better have some good answers here because it's kind of tough. One guest here, Sean, has kind of an engineering business background, and our other guest, Henry, has a more technical background involved in security. So we should cover a lot of topics here involved with Hortonworks. Yeah. But before we begin, Sean, tell us about your background, please.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, my background, computer science, computer engineering, started developing ground control stations for UAVs. I've always had a passion where technology overlaps with business, and so been an avid follower of open source. My time in the system integrator community brought me to Red Hat, where I was able to experience the exciting world of enterprise open source and really see the traction and evolution of that technology in the government space. About 9 months ago, I had the opportunity to join another exciting, great company, Hortonworks, very similar business model, taking the power of open source and putting it in an enterprise consumable fashion in this exciting area of big data.
Boy, it's real exciting. You know, I read a figure this morning, Henry, and it said that 90% of all data has been created in the last 2 years. That's stunning, isn't it? Tell us about your background and how you can help our listeners.
Yeah,
big
sure.
data.
Yeah, so it's funny, you know, my focus really for the public sector has just come from my love of the mission. And it was an interesting transition as I was an infantry in the Marine Corps, wouldn't even see a computer, but seeing what we saw on the battlefield, bringing that to the importance of what we're doing in the government, ended up coming to the FBI, doing the counterterrorism mission there, and understanding the importance of data and its growth. And as we started to try to deal with very complex problems, Hadoop came up on the scene of how do I take vast amounts of data and actually get actionable intelligence from that to help drive our mission. And that really sparked my love of Hadoop. And about in 2015, I got the opportunity to expand that broadly across many different mission sets by coming to Hortonworks and living the open source nature that allows more accessibility throughout our community really helps us to achieve the mission.
Yeah, I want to focus on open source and how it can help my federal IT professionals who are listening. But I want to get over some of these hurdles. And I go to events all the time. Sean goes to events all the time. We were both at events last night, different parts of town. And if you meet someone at an event and they ask you, Hortonworks, so what's your 30-second answer? So, Sean, what do you do? Hortonworks, what the heck is that? So how do you explain your company?
Yeah, so we are a data management company founded on the premise of enterprise open source. Everything we do is enterprise open source, no proprietary technology whatsoever. And that's resonant in every aspect of our company, how we develop code, how we partner, right? We have a very large ecosystem of partners and even competitors who we work together with. And so when you look at the world that's evolving as quickly as data and the missions, it's really important to have the flexibility of supporting not only today's requirements, but we're going to go tomorrow. And so that's really what Hortonworks does.
So, Henry, if you go to Google and type in Hortonworks, the first phrase that pops up is Apache Software Foundation. So yeah. What the heck is that got? Hortonworks, Apache? I don't understand this relationship.
It's our commitment to the open source environment. Apache Software Foundation really codifies how the open source community works together, right? And it's a merit-based system, right, that you have to come in there. You have to be able to show your value through what you contribute, how you test, how you involve. And so Hortonworks is dedicated to being a part of that process that allows for openness. It really allows for innovation to never stop, right? You're not bound by a single company with their 20 developers at during business hours. You're actually working nonstop around the world with, you know, hundreds of developers working on a project. And that's what ASF does.
So, Sean, in 2003, I did a live radio broadcast from the new Washington Convention Center, right down there in Mount Vernon Square. And during this live event, this guy walked in with this big penguin, and he wanted to talk about Linux and open source. And I looked at everyone and go, open source? What the? Is this like some little college fad? Is this like a fraternity thing or something or other? But back in those years, right, open source was like very niche-y, and maybe the math majors would do this for fun on the weekends or something. So tell us about open source and where it was in 2003 and where it is today for my listeners.
Yeah, so back then, that penguin was infamous down in the labs, right?
Right.
There was the T-shirts, and every one of the screensavers and computers had one of those. You know, open source back then was the recognition that there are things that are, you know, evolutionary and that require a premium, the proprietary capabilities that are necessary. But then you have commoditized solutions like an operating system back then that didn't really warrant the closeness of, you know, back in those days, proprietary solutions. And so what open source did is it gave developers, it gave program managers, it gave business owners, you know, cost, capability, and choice. You know, breaking down those barriers, having revolutionary development models, new ways of planning for your system and bringing things in. So fast forward to today, where back then open source was oh my goodness, what is this, right? Is it secure? Is it safe? Is it now today it's an open source first mentality. The recognition that, you know, with many eyes, all defects are shallow, right? And being able to integrate and bring in the new technologies and the rapid pace of integration. It's really just not possible in a traditional model.
You know, you have a background in ground control stations, and now what's real popular is satellites, satellite technology, geospatial. In fact, there's a geospatial company called Boundless, which focuses on open source systems. So open source is being applied not to many different areas, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah. The use cases are really endless. And when you think about folks that are doing innovative and forward-leaning things, it's difficult to accomplish that in technologies that were developed 5 or 10 years ago that don't have the number of developers and the number of contributors and the ability and agility to integrate as fast to accomplish that. So when you look at in the commercial space where innovation is happening, it's happening in the open source world.
So Henry, let's say it's Thanksgiving time. You're sitting around your family, your weirdo cousins is in the table, and your cousin pounds on the table and goes, well, how can open source be more secure than licensed stuff? I mean, so you just throw the turkey leg at him, or what's your response?
Yeah, so, you know, what you see is actually how does the community work, right? You know, Sean mentioned this, right? When you have a many, many eyes on a project, these problems are shallow because they're going to be discovered. They're going to boil up, and you're going to address them and fix them. They don't go hidden within some company to go, oh my God, we've got a security issue. Well, it's 20 developers. We'll get it out, and we'll tell the community when we want to. That's not how the open source community works. These issues are out there in the open. They have to be addressed, and they're addressed at that same speed of innovation that is inherent in the community.
Yeah, I think the life cycle development model is the same. Software is software. And mm-hmm. So there are requirements, there is development, and it goes through the same production life cycle. What a company like Hortonworks does is we take that source code and we put it through the production, the testing, the qualification, the certifications, and overall productization to make it enterprise consumable. But everything left of that it's the same, whether it's a proprietary solution or an open source one.
Yep.
So, Sean, this morning I got up early. I went to Wikipedia, typed in Hortonworks.
Yep.
And all these strange Hadoop, distributed file system, map, reduce, pig, hive, HBase, zookeeper. It's like, wow, these are the strangest words I've ever heard. This is this is all part of your package, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what happens when you let engineers name things. But that's why I keep Henry with me.
So Henry Walsh is in the Pentagon and says, hey, I want to talk about hives and pigs today. And they say, hey, hit the door, buddy.
You're sick. We need to get you out of here.
There's a lot of interesting components of it.
Yeah. Let's do this. Let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk more about open source and you know exactly what this data platform is all about. And Hortonworks is well known in many areas. In fact, Hortonworks has relationships with Amazon Web Services, with Microsoft, with IBM. It's like they're everyone's buddy because it must be something practical that other people need. So let's talk about open source and switch to the people you partner with where they can take advantage of some of the years of experience you've had in these large data sets. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Sean Bierweiler, president at Hortonworks Federal, and Henry Sowell, technical director for public sector at Hortonworks. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Sean Bierweiler, president at Hortonworks Federal, and Henry Sowell, technical director for public sector at Hortonworks. We're talking about managing large data sets, open source, and I know there are people who are listening that are writing down open source, and they're going, well, open source, cybersecurity, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There may be places they can go to learn things and read about this, Henry, so can you suggest some place for them to go and learn about, you know, Hortonworks and security?
Yeah, definitely. We have a few resources that I'd direct everybody to. One, we have a Hortonworks Solutions Public Sector page that has some great case studies that you can get a good overview. We also have a blog that has a really great cybersecurity series that's ongoing right now that I would check out. And lastly, if you're really into the technical space, we even have tutorials that can walk you through this process and walk you through how to enable security. So it's really a lot of resources on our site.
I was at Hortonworks.com this morning. They have a great search because what happens is when you hit that little magnifying glass, it just blows up in front of you. It's one of the best ones I've ever seen. I don't know how you come up with that, but it sounds real good, you know?
It was all me.
So I get up in the morning and do my research, and I go to Twitter. Yep. And you folks have a Twitter handle, don't you, Sean?
We do. So at Hortonworks is our public handle, but if you're interested in government, state and local, higher ed, really the federal content, it's at HortonworksGov, all one word, HortonworksGov.
Yeah. I was talking to a gentleman last night who focuses on the DoD. And we were talking about innovation and startups and cybersecurity and all the people in town. I was at 1776 and all kinds of innovation there. And what the federal government is finally conceding and saying, well, maybe out in Silicon Valley, maybe they have a leg up on some of these things. And so they have a little office set up out there. And Sean, what I think is going to happen, this govy is going to go out there and find out that if you don't talk open source, you're not going to be talking much out there, are you?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Because that's really where the latest innovation and movements are happening. It's happening in the open source. The Facebooks, the Googles, the Amazons of the world, they can't be constrained by proprietary solutions, proprietary business models. So it's absolutely going to be, and I think we've already seen that cultural shift. I think DIUX is a recognition of the need to change. And so I don't believe you're going to have too many surprises out there when we're talking open source solutions.
So Henry, if you go to your Twitter feed, which I was at this morning, hashtag this, hashtag that. Here's a hashtag, optimize big data warehouse. So just for the sake of our listeners, tell us what a warehouse is and why should you optimize it and what value would that have for my listeners?
Yeah, so think of a warehouse as just a standardized place where people can go and access data, right? That they can, that there's a model created that they could go and achieve their mission, create reports, drive their public sector mission along. What is traditionally happened is that there's these silos that created, right? So that I have one aspect of my mission and I put it in a specific database or set of data. And you have all these silos that they don't get to cross-communicate and you don't get to understand your data at large. And, you know, I talked about, you know, in my counterterrorism mission, this directly impacted our mission of not being able to see across our different data sets to go after, you know, a suspect. Or if you're trying to track logistics within the Army, you know, these are all things that you have to get past. And Hadoop really allows you to take the training wheels off your data and to really run forward and be successful by going across the data silos and be able to expand.
And so there's this term called a data lake that people are using also, kind of similar concept to a warehouse, just a big collection of data or something?
Yeah, and it's without the walls, right? So that data lake is the place where you get to store all of your data. Now, that doesn't mean that you take away from your security and your access controls that you need and are inherent to running a successful mission, but it allows you the ability to go across those data sets in that data lake, right? So it's about bringing that data together and giving your customers within your public sector place, right? Whoever's running your technology, the people that are driving your mission to be able to access and to achieve what they're looking for.
So, Sean, if we go look at the origins of Hortonworks and we look at Hadoop and we look at what Hadoop does, it takes down the walls, doesn't it? It takes a large data set and it runs things in parallel rather than serial. It spreads things out like a lake or a pond in order to access quickly.
Yeah, and just to expand on kind of what Henry was saying for the less technical folks out there, a data lake doesn't care about the format. And so when you talk about our missions and the proliferation of new data types, they are not the same as they used to be. It is not structured. And by structured, that's like a phone number, a name, and email address, very easily searched. These are videos. This is sensor data. This is metadata embedded in images. And so in your traditional way of doing things, there was a lot of redundant conversions that took place, a lot of energy to convert it before you put it in, convert it before then pull it out, and then do your work on it. Very timely and very costly. The data lake, you store it in its native format. And so in addition to all the goodness that you mentioned, the barriers that it takes down is you store data as it's received. And in our space, as you mentioned, you can imagine the use cases there as we're receiving data from so many different sources and formats, and they need to interact with one another. That's really the power of the data lake.
So Henry, you read stuff, I read stuff. I read these terms like structured data, unstructured data, semi-structured data, mostly structured data. I mean, you can't classify it. And so there has to be new tools have to develop in order to understand all these different data points in this lake.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You know, there's other terms like dark data, right?
Dark data.
It's very similar to the things that Sean was saying. Like, imagine if you're scanning images, right? So let's say you're you have a law office that is required to scan a ton of images of all the documents that you've signed. How do you search the text of that, right? It's an image. Well, that is part of this, this format that you want to be able to bring that into your data lake process so that you can actually recognize the text on that, store it at large, compare it to your database, to your other structured data sets. So you have the flexibility within this environment of storing it as you receive it, processing it for the capabilities that you want, and to be able to search across various different types of formats. And it doesn't have to be in a manner that isn't relevant to the existing technology stack that you're working in. So if you have developers that are used to working on your standard databases, well, there are tools that work within the big data environment that allow those same skill sets to be able to apply to the big data space.
So, Sean, we're going to play a little Stump the Nerd here for you. And the question is this. And so, we're sitting at Starbucks having a cup of coffee going back and forth. And I turn to you and I go, well, gee, Sean, so what is big data? Is there like a delineator there between middle-sized data and big data? I mean, what is, generally speaking, is there a rule of thumb for what big data is?
No, I don't think there is. And with most buzzwords, it's hard to put an exact definition on it. I think almost every organization is a data organization. And any organization that has more data than they are able to handle or that they are not maximizing the potential for that has a big data problem. It's easy to collect and store data. It's more difficult to proactively analyze and come up with actionable intelligence. We have a DoD customer that was able to take the historical data in their data set with real-time sensors coming off of the platform to do condition-based maintenance, to proactively assess when things are going to break so that they could get ahead of issues at hand. And that is, an issue they didn't recognize initially, but then when they see it, they realize, oh my goodness, I had a big data problem.
In the aerospace industry, it costs millions of dollars to overhaul a plane. Wouldn't it be nice to know ahead of time?
That's right.
Save some money.
And so that's the thing. When you have when you have data that's historically available and accessible that you can marry in near real time with the sensor data coming off, the capabilities are really amazing and endless.
So, Henry, I'm going to give you my five-word definition of big data, and you can tell me if it's a good definition or not. You ready? Gonna need a bigger boat. That's how I define it. It's like, hey, you get to a point where I can't handle this. I mean, we got all these new feeds coming in. You've got this IoT stuff. It's just, how do you handle it? That's the question. And that's why people call you up, and they go, well, geez, Henry, come on down. We don't know what we're doing. We're trying to figure this out. And you can say, well, here's some choices you have, and they've been proven in the open source community.
Yeah, and I think some of the things that have hampered government agencies is the sticking to the traditional model of I just got to buy a bigger box, right? I got to buy a larger set of storage arrays, and what ends up happening is that ends up costing millions and millions of dollars for just hardware before you've done anything, right? And what we really want to say is that look, there is the open source technology that allows you to scale. It allows you to scale on commodity hardware. That allows you to be really cost effective in your, and so that you could focus on your mission, right? That you could properly apply your budget to what you need. and out there, and that you can adjust, right? So as you start hitting the bounds of even the commodity stuff, all you do is add additional boxes, right? And that allows you to approach the big data space and to be able to take on, you know, like you said, every within the last 2 years, 80% of data, right? That is a real factor, and we're just growing exponentially. So we have to figure out and innovate in new ways of storing data and processing it.
Sean, we're going to take a break and come back. When we come back, we're going to go back in time, back to 2003 again, and talk about feuds and Hatfields and McCoys and Microsoft and open source and IBM and how that playing field has changed in the last couple of years, especially in regards to Hortonworks. And it's a whole different set of feuds here. In fact, there are not many feuds anymore that I can see, the old school feuds. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, Sean Bierweiler, president at Hortonworks Federal, and Henry Sowell, Technical Director for Public Sector at Hortonworks. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Sean Bierweiler, President at Hortonworks Federal, and Henry Sowell, Technical Director for Public Sector at Hortonworks as well. They specialize in Hadoop. They've got years of experience. They're everywhere. During the interview, early part of the interview, we talked about way back in 2003. And they tore down one convention center, Henry. They built another one. I did a live broadcast from the floor. We had 400 people in the audience, had all kinds of adventures. And when I think about that, I think about Microsoft's in suits and ties and IBM's in suits and ties and other companies that, and there were feuds. I mean, the IBM people hated the Xerox people, who hated the Microsoft. And there was a lot of hatred going back and forth. And they would, they signed a proprietary license with Microsoft and we got kicked out. And there was fighting words, you know. Yep. Now today, we see a flexible company like Hortonworks. They're going, hey, IBM, I'm your buddy. Hey, Microsoft, I can help you. And by the way, AWS, I can help you too. So it's a different world in my world, isn't it, Sean?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think there's been a redefinition of value, right? So back to 2003, value was about the technology, and the goal as a software provider really was to have a customer locked in and to be a lifelong customer, and so you had that.
And don't say open source. Shut up.
That's right. Yeah, open source was something that was completely foreign, because how can you be a successful company with no intellectual property without that lock in for that customer relationship?
They evaluate it not on the software itself, but on the revenue that can produce for them. Oh, it can't produce revenue for me, so it's worthless.
Right, which makes it really challenging for, in our space, if you're a federal customer and you are a very small percentage of that company's overall revenue, it's difficult for you to realize the requirements that you need in your system. And so open source really gives everyone a voice, gives everyone a fair and open playing ground.
I've had many guests in the studio here, 515 interviews. Years ago, I had Anish Chopra in the studio, and he was talking about moving to the cloud, and kind of the background was open source. It was almost implied, wasn't it? I see this move to the cloud, open source, flexible, dynamic. When it comes to this and cybersecurity, so what can Hadoop do for my listeners as far as cybersecurity goes?
Yeah, so one of the things that what we've seen with traditional cybersecurity platforms is is the traditional SIEMs that were rule-based, where an attacker would come in, and if that attacker met my rules that I set up, then I would block them, right? But that is not how attackers work, right? Because if attacker says, hey, I can't get through this all, they step to the left, and then they find another way to enter. And what Hadoop is allowing in this space, particularly we've got a project called Apache Metron, worth checking out on our site. But if you look at that, what we're doing is, we still have the rule base, because that'll get you your first line of defense. But the second part is I have to use machine learning to understand my own network, what looks abnormal on my network, how do I identify those threats, how do I enrich that, how do I take this at scale and be able to proactively go after targets that are trying to infiltrate my network. And that's what Hadoop is allowing in this space, is really to take the reins off the old systems. They're still important. You still want to be able to integrate with them, but go that next level of using machine learning and artificial intelligence to identify threats.
So we're going to go from Henry in cybersecurity. We're going to talk to Sean about pizza delivery.
Yes.
What? Wait a minute, what's going on here? That's not fair. Well, if you do research on Hortonworks, you see stuff, articles that Pizza Hut using big data to improve delivery time.
That's right. Yeah. We talked earlier about being able to take that historical data with the real time to have actionable intelligence and insights. And that's just a slightly more at home use case for it, but the use cases take that and apply it over to federal systems, platforms, a single view of a soldier when you're thinking about healthcare, following an individual through their career. It's a different resource, a different figure, but the applications are the same. And we're seeing applications even less exciting than that when you think about just your basic operational use cases. I read a statistic that some organizations are spending more than 90% just keeping their legacy systems running.
Ugh.
And so, we've been talking about the machine learning, and we're talking about some of the leaning forward things. Our technology is being used to modernize old antiquated ERP and mm-hmm. EDW systems to allow customers to do what they were doing yesterday just at a much cheaper and more efficient rate.
There's a guy in town named Lon Solomon, and he's famous for saying, yeah. So what? Yeah, so what? Okay. And so, Henry, I'll come up to you and I go, hey, guess what? We got 10 terabytes of information here. It's great. And tomorrow I'm going to have 10 terabytes more. And on Wednesday, I'm going to have 10 terabytes. And you can have tons and tons of terabytes. And you're going to say, so what? I mean, I could have a billion terabytes, but it doesn't have any value unless you can have actionable intelligence from it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, one of the things that we talk about is the value of your data. And I think a lot of the challenge that we see in the public sector is that people limit their questions to the existing technology within mm-hmm. their agencies, rather than thinking about, what is my mission question? What is the thing that I really need to be running after? I need to take the reins off that and to go after my actual mission. We see this in several of the defense spaces of they've got a problem and they're just barely keeping their head above water because they're just asking the questions that fit within their existing technology. And then we're able to start saying things like, I want to be able to catch a terrorist, right? Well, how do you do that? And it's funny because we can automate, 90% of that process with their existing data, but they're not finding the value of their data if they're not looking forward. And that goes across many different spaces where we see this with different visions. Veterans is a great one, right? The pizza box delivery. Well, what if I said that veteran in a hospital that I said, based off of their current health, what they've done in various different appointments and systems, the infectious rate that we've seen in the hospital, that guy needs a specific set of treatments, right? And you can start putting those pieces together to identify real world mission pieces from your data.
Sean, of course, I was being facetious talking about pizza delivery. And while I was saying pizza delivery, I wrote down Dr. Francis Collins, who runs NIH, a PhD and a medical doctor. First time I met him, he had a guitar. And they run all kinds of longitudinal studies, and they have – there's some people out there with some serious illnesses, and they have tons and tons of – I mean, they don't lack any data. I need some. They don't say, I need some terabytes. Hey, Henry, go down to the store and get me some terabytes. Right. They got plenty of terabytes. What they have to do is try to figure out how to use it efficiently and effectively, and what happens when the new terabytes show up, mm-hmm. and they're in a mm-hmm. different format. And so I walk into Sean's office and go, here's some structured data, figure it out. And the next day, here's some unstructured data, figure it out. And, oh, by the way, it's changed. And that's a flexibility skill, isn't it? That's what Horton does.
It does, yeah. And just to kind of build off of that, we were down at DHITS this week, and big data was a huge topic for DHA and the VA and
HHS. Down in Florida?
Yeah, I was down in Orlando. Everyone has a data problem, and it's exactly the use case that you were just mentioning. Healthcare is a very strong use case for Hortonworks. Going back to the website at hortonworks.com, I would encourage you to check that out. We're doing some very revolutionary things with medical professions. Arizona State University is doing a genomic study on trying to break down cancer using that data that you're mentioning. And so they're using Hadoop to empower that. And there's some really exciting quotes about how they couldn't do that in a closed system, how the open source, not just from a community perspective, from a technical perspective, allows them to take what they're learning and rapidly integrate it into the system, because you don't know what you don't know, and you learn as you go. And if you have a rigid system that's unable to adapt, really, you're not going to get the intelligence. You're just going to be spinning your wheels. And so absolutely. And as we get more data, and as we get more insight, and as we couple these pieces together, the data grows because two pieces of data then marry together to form a third piece of data. And when you know, as you keep compounding that, that's how you get to the really drowning in big data problem.
Now, let's go back in time, back to 2003. Back in 2003, people were, geez, if I only had a 200 megabyte hard drive, it'd solve all my problems. If I only had 10 200 megabyte, but back in 2003, no one realized that, you know, just having those big, and now we have the biggest hard drive as you want. That doesn't mean it's going to solve your problem, does it? You know, and it could solve your problem. It could not solve your problem. It's like you give you a mile of rope. You can do tons of things with it, but it's a new world in understanding the data. It just ain't enough to have it.
Right. You used to be able to solve your problems by rolling a bigger box in. And now the approach has to change. The architecture has to change and the solution has to change. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, we're really proud of our partner program. We have over 2,100 partners that we work with in the various spaces. There is no single solution that accomplishes the objectives for every customer. And so we partner with various business intelligence consumers, various search partners, various hardware. We recently announced an expanded relationship with IBM that we're very proud of as well. And so I think that just speaks to not only the industry's recognition of validation of our model, but also kind of our approach to supporting exactly what you're referring to.
Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about Hortonworks and distributed processing and talk maybe a little bit about how it can help my federal listeners achieve some of their goals, which are kind of typical goals for these years. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in the studio. Sean Bierweiler, president at Hortonworks Federal, and Henry Sowell, technical director for public sector at Hortonworks. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in the studio. We have Sean Bierweiler, president at Hortonworks Federal, and Henry Sowell, technical director for Hortonworks as well. We're talking about big data. We're talking about Hadoop and Hortonworks and really how you can help our listeners. And this topic is like, you know, this is an $800 topic. We're trying to do this in like 1 hour, so it's almost impossible. And so what you can do is you can go to Wikipedia and type in Hortonworks, and you find all these different words and terms, and you have to learn about MapReduce, and you got to learn about structured, unstructured, and data lakes, and you wind up calling Suicide Hotline. And so there's easier ways to do it, and I like going to meetups. I like going to webinars and just sitting back of the room and absorbing what I can. Anything for my listeners to try to figure out what this is all about here?
Yeah, so we're really active in the meetup scene, especially here in D.C. So I'd recommend going on meetup and searching for Hortonworks D.C. Check out what we've got going on. We're also involved in other projects within the area, other open source projects, so check that out. I'd also look forward using our Hortonworks Gov Twitter handle because we're going to be releasing several webinars in the next quarter. So look forward to that, and we'll help you dig deeper.
Well, that's a good idea. What you can do is you can go to Twitter and follow at HortonworksGov and just see what's going on. Then we come up with an announcement. Okay, so it's going to be a meetup. It's going to be downtown D.C. near Fairgrounds West Metro. Yep. I'll pop in, see what's going on. If it's boring, I'll leave. If it can help me, I'll stay. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely.
If Hadoop can help you, fine. If it can't, well, you know, it's going to help you. You may not realize it or not.
Yeah, right? And we also push out real interesting use cases, right? The pizza box one would be one that is easily digestible. But really in our space, if there's a customer use case or a specific story, HortonworksGov at Twitter is the best place to get that.
Well, Henry, because you're the brains in the room, we're going to give you the toughest question here, buddy.
All right.
You know, no one could have predicted back to 2003 what's happening today. And I'm going to have you make a prediction for about 5 years down the road here with open source and the government and Hortonworks and size of hard drives. And are you pretty optimistic what's going to happen? You think they're going to get it under control? Or what's going to happen here in 5 years? It's too crazy for me.
Yeah, it's funny. Any technical guy worth their salt, if they told you this is what's going to happen in 5 years, you
throw them out the window.
Let me answer that one.
It's going to be hard. It's hard to predict. But what I'll tell you is there's going to be continued trends, right? You're going to see changes in storage, right? As solid state drives become more and more cheap, you're going to see the prevalence in that expanding within the market. I think that you're going to see huge changes on machine learning and artificial intelligence and the adoption there and the ease of use, right? I think that's going to be something that is going to be more approachable in a wider spectrum. And I think that's going to enable so many different mission sets within the public sector. So becoming an early adopter in to that and helping to shape that future is going to be key for, you know, your listeners.
Sean, I got to put you in a spot here. You know, your company motto is that we are powering the future of data. So what is the future of data? Where is it heading?
Yeah, so I was just taking some notes down when Henry was talking, and you think about, you know, early pioneers. I would argue that we're already past the early pioneer stage when you look at IoT and smart city, connected car, you know, single view. I think data has always been a driving source, but now data is the new currency. Really, it's going to be up to our organizations to define how they want to use that and ensure that they have a solution and a system architecture that truly future-proofs their approach. Yep. And that's where a partner like Hortonworks, an enterprise open source solution approach, is really going to be essential.
So Henry, the people at IBM are partnering with you folks, people at Red Hat are partnering with you folks, the people at Microsoft, and so the open source solution, it's hard for me even to say Microsoft and open source in the same sentence. It's just, it just doesn't make any sense at all. And so this whole world of technology and large data sets, it's very fluid. There's really no way to predict who's going to partner next.
Yeah, so I think what we're seeing is that a lot of the community is saying, you know, where's your expertise, where's your focus, and how do we scale certain lines of our business, right? So Microsoft was one of the first to say that, hey, look, we shouldn't be in the Hadoop space because this isn't our area, but Hortonworks is, and if we partner with them because they're open, we can depend on being able to integrate with them and being future-proof and continue to expand that. And you saw Pivotal follow in that same vein, and now you've seen IBM, right? They all understand that Hortonworks is the expert in this community, and that's why they've changed their distribution to be really focused around Hortonworks. And I think that just speaks to the power of open source in that community. And so it actually is why, you know, 2,100 plus partners that really enables them. And then from a government perspective is, you know, we see this really in interesting places like research. If I'm a large institution doing research and I'm using an open source technology, how do I get my research verified by other institutions? If I'm using a proprietary, very expensive piece that my large institution can afford, what about the next institution that I want to test my results? They need to be able to have something that is open source that they can also adopt as well. And that's what Hortonworks provides for both commercial partners and for our government partners.
So Sean, I got up this morning, I went to YouTube, I typed in Hortonworks, I watched a bunch of videos. One video was by Pivotal, and it was a really good one. It's a good company. Is it one of your partners, or have you worked with them in the past?
They are, yeah. So as Henry mentioned, Pivotal, when they acquired Greenplum, they acquired a Hadoop distribution. And you know, through evaluating their go-to-market strategy and really the sustainability of where they wanted to go as an organization, they determined it was counterproductive to try to compete, right? And so rather than compete, they teamed with us. And now we go to market with them. We are their Hadoop distro for any Hadoop that Pivotal sells. You know, the one thing that I would say is I certainly think that the open source approach has been validated by the market, by the industry. The one caution I would give is a lot of people like to tout open, right? It's become a nice buzzword that folks like to associate with. And so not all open is created equal. You know, proprietary comes in different flavors, and a hybrid open source approach is really just proprietary with a different flavor. And I really think that our true commitment to open source, a lack of proprietary and partnering and going to market, has really been the reason why we've seen such great adoption and commitments from our partners and customers.
Oscar, a question here. So when you have new people that come out of college with computer science degrees and you work with them at Hortonworks here, do they have a tendency just to think more in terms of open source? I think they think in terms of apps and mobile, and maybe this is it all fits together.
Yeah, I think both, right? So as an institution, what's the easiest way to get your folks to be able to drive projects and to—
Free pizza.
Yeah, free pizza and free services,
brought
right?
Brought to you by Hortonworks.
And they do that via the open source. So we're seeing that is the default as kids coming out of college, is that they're used to working on this in the open, that their resumes are built off of their GitHub page, right? That, you know, that is just a part of who they are. So, you know, operating outside those norms is something that's obtuse to them. So.
Yeah. The GSA started talking about working with GitHub, and it's really, don't know, it's a mind shift. It's a concept. It's something that's difficult. And I think there's some organizations that try it, and they have some stumbles, don't they? And
yeah, collaboration is a scary thing when you're breaking down those barriers and you're being forced to redefine the value proposition in your business model. I think any type of cultural shift is scary. And that's one of the greatest challenges to modernization as a whole, is making that step into the new direction.
So I've got to ask a technical question here. So the Apache Software Foundation is a nonprofit group where they retain the core. Tell me about this Apache group again, the sort of foundation.
Yeah, so they have what they call top level projects, right? So that's you'll see the Hortonworks distribution has over 26 of these projects that are built into that. So each project has a community that's around that project, and like I was talking about earlier, it's based on merit, right? So if you put enough work into the community, if you show a dedication to that specific project, you get a different level of status, so committer status, and shows your expertise and your commitment to that project. Hortonworks employs more open source contributors in the Hadoop community than more than double the next group that's in that space. So over 210 different committers throughout these various projects. It just shows the dedication that we have towards the Apache Software Foundation and the projects that are within that community.
So it went from a coder to a systems developer to a committer. Is that the progression?
Yeah. You have guys that they like to come in and they'll make a comment and suggestion. And we welcome that, right? Like, we want people whether they're our customer, whether they're just a college kid that's working on there, to come on and say, hey, I found a bug, or let me test something, and they would get a committer status. And then we go past that when you get to become a committer.
Well, Henry, you're running out of time here. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I have a funny handle. It's called @RayGilRay. And what's your Twitter handle for your company?
It's just HortonWorksGov is ours.
Great. Thanks. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests, Sean Bierweiler, president of Hortonworks Federal, and Henry Sowell, technical director for public sector at Hortonworks. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.